Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome one and all to Trisha's True Crime Radio. We have a very special edition tonight. So before we get started, let's goo ourselves, shall we? With our legal goo, we're the only radio show that does legally goo you at the beginning and the end of every show. Opinions expressed on Trisha's True Crime Radio are those of the hosts and guests. Do remember that, okay? Trisha's True Crime Radio is a completely separate entity from WebSleuths.com, LLC, and ForumsForJustice.org. In other words, my darling friends, if you hear something on Trisha's True Crime Radio that upsets you, don't take it out on the forums. Come to me, and we'll make you happy again. Tonight, we actually have two topics that both end up with the same result: cyberbullying and cyber harassment. Now, what's the difference? Well, according to WiredSafety.org, this is a website specializing in crimes on the Internet, cyberbullying happens when it's a minor harassing or bullying another minor on the Internet. Cyber harassment is when it's an adult doing the bullying. And to Tina Minor, it doesn't really matter what you call it, because the fact remains her daughter Megan killed herself because of what an adult and this adult's daughter and her friends did. They set up a fake MySpace page and made it with a boy who pretended to like Megan in the beginning and then said horrible things in the end to Megan right before she killed herself. It is such a tragic, horrible story. We'll be talking with Tina also a little bit later on. We'll bring in some friends of ours, Michael from Michigan and Vicky. They'll tell us about their cyber harassment stories. But first, let me welcome Tina Meyer to Trisha's True Crime Radio. Tina, thank you so much for taking the time out to join us tonight. Tina, are you there? Tina. Whoops, hold on. Are you there, Tina?
Yes, Tina? I'm here.
Ah, there we go. I'm sorry. I don't know what happened. It just all of a sudden got stuck. Anyway, welcome to Trisha's True Crime Radio,
Tina.
And first of all, let's talk about Megan. She passed away, was it in 2006, I believe?
Yes, correct. October 17th of 2006.
Tell us what Megan was like.
You know, Megan was really, from very early on, this just fun and energetic kid. Megan was a complete goofball. She, you know, enjoyed laughing. She liked playing goofy tricks on her family and friends. She, you know, loved scary movies. She loved animals. I mean, Megan was, you know, a normal, typical kid, but she also had that other part where Megan was extremely self-conscious, had really low self-esteem of herself compared to other kids, especially girls. And this started in kindergarten. You know, and when you have a child who struggles with self-esteem, it's really hard because many times we as parents think, well, if we love them enough or, you know, care about them, they're wonderful, they're this, why don't they see that? It can be really hard, and it starts feeling like as parents, no matter what you try to do, it's not helping. And so, you know, I tried getting her involved in extracurricular activities because we always know that children who do suffer from low self-esteem, get them involved in something where they at least feel like they belong and they have that connection. So I did try that with many, many different things. But, you know, Megan, you know, she would still struggle and she would do good, but then she'd still always, I always explained, she was kind of like this puzzle piece that even though she had friends and even though she did, you know, things were good, she always kind of felt like she never quite fit into place. There was always that outside part, and those were things that we definitely struggled with during her elementary and middle school years.
And now she did see a therapist, correct, to help her with these issues.
Right.
So she was getting help, and that's a good thing. That's a very good thing.
Right. Yeah, you know, Megan in third grade was struggling, and I sat in her bed one night, and she said she wanted to kill herself. And for a third grade child saying this, I was petrified. I thought, where in the world did she even hear this from? I mean, I didn't even know what to say to her. I panicked. I took off running to the bathroom and sobbed. Went back in and asked her why she would feel the same. She said, Mom, everybody hates me. I hate myself.
Oh, my God.
I said, Megan, do you even know what this means? And I was really praying that she did not, but Megan knew what it meant. And I took her to the pediatrician the next day, And over a long period of time, Megan was diagnosed with depression and attention deficit disorder, or ADD. And from that point, it was long discussions of therapy and medications, and so we did. We did put her on medication and therapy. And she did go through that during the rest of her elementary school years and in the middle school years.
And so she was doing okay, and she was your typical teenager, it sounds like, you know, goofball, having fun. And being a typical teenager,
right.
Megan Meyer wanted to get on the Internet. And tell us
right.
what happened there with MySpace.
Sure. Megan was a very determined girl. If there was something that she felt was right or wrong, something that she wanted to do, I mean, that girl was determined to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And in seventh grade, she was struggling quite a bit. She had boys who stomped behind her in the lunch line, calling her a fat cow and an elephant, making noises. Megan, you know, would not eat lunch anymore. She was not dressing up for gym. You know, as a parent, I finally found out that these things were going on. No matter what we tried doing, it just was not helping. And so that's why I switched her to a new school for her eighth grade year. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, as much as she struggled, during the summer of the eighth grade year, Megan had started maturing, you know, is the best word.
Mm-hmm.
We started working out together, and she started losing a little bit of weight. And it's always kind of that thing when you're exercising, you start feeling better. And
mm-hmm.
she did that. Started the volleyball team, making new friends, and going into this eighth grade year, this child who had struggled for so long was just finally this fun kid that was going to the movies and spending the night. And, you know, in her eighth grade year, it was finally this huge sigh of relief of like, this is what she needed. And,
right.
you know, about 3 weeks into her eighth grade year, she came home and said, "Mom, I'm going to be 14, you know, and I have a MySpace, please. Everybody has MySpace, Mom. Come on, please."
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't thrilled. I was that mom who, you know, worried about sexual predators and different things. And I said, "Meg, I really don't know. Let me think about it."
Mm-hmm.
And so I did for a couple of days. I came up with some rules. The first rule was, "Meg, you don't have the password to the account. I have the password." Her profile
mm-hmm.
was kept private. Computers were
Good.
Always in open spaces. I had to monitor anything that went on her page, and I also had a program to monitor every instant message and web page. And
mm-hmm.
believe me, Megan was not thrilled with these rules at all.
But they're good rules. They're very good rules. You would think, with those rules, Tina, you would think your daughter would be safe.
I was hoping, honestly. I really thought, and I didn't want to be that mom that, you know, had to follow them around wherever they went. But I also knew Megan was impulsive, and Megan wanted to be accepted. And mm-hmm. There was always that fear that Megan always saw the good. Everything was always at least three-quarters full to Megan. She didn't see that little bit of, well, maybe this isn't a good idea if it doesn't feel right. Megan kind of would just go for it. And so those rules were in place, and Megan started mm-hmm. Her MySpace, adding friends from her old school, friends from her new school, and about 3 weeks after that, she got a friend request from a good-looking boy by the name of Josh Evans. Megan thought he was as cute as can be and begged me to please let her add him. I did let her add him, and I told her that she could add him as a friend. If there's anything negative or sexual, he'd delete it immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And I know there's probably people that will listen to this and say, you know, listen, Tina, what is your problem? You know, you had all of these strict rules, and then you let her add somebody she doesn't know. Why would you do that? Well, the reason I did that is because I knew Megan. Megan
mm-hmm.
would have been curious enough. She would have went behind my back. She would have went to a library, to a friend's house. Like the majority of kids, if you ask kids in today's world, how many of them know somebody who's made up a fake account? You can get, no matter where I go across the country into schools, you can get at least a third, if not more, to raise their hand.
That's
I knew
right.
that she would have done that, and then I wouldn't have had any chance. So Megan and Josh liked each other. She thought he was cute. He thought she was cute, and it was basic stuff. You know, now 5 weeks, if you advance 5 weeks forward, Megan and Josh, you know, had liked each other a lot. Now they're really more friends, but Megan, of course, still thinks he's cute.
Mm-hmm.
She was getting ready for this huge 14th birthday. This morning, it was October 15th, 2006. She had two volleyball games that night. I signed her on because she wanted to fill out her birthday invitation. But when I signed her on, she had a message from Josh that was completely out of the blue that said, I don't want to be friends with you. You're not a nice person. Megan was didn't understand where that came from, and she was kind of confused, like, why? And she even asked me, and she responded back, and there was no response. And I said, it's time to sign off. Next morning, Megan wakes up for school. She's in this phenomenal mood. All of her birthday invitations ready. She was getting her braces off the next day, and she was so excited. I took her on the way to school, and on the way, Megan asked me to stop at the gas station, which she would do periodically. And she would run in and get two Hershey candy bars. She would give one Hershey candy bar to somebody who was having a bad day, and then she would have the other Hershey candy bar. And so we did that morning. So this was a kid who was thinking about somebody else. She was happy. Things were great. I pick her up from school that day. She's in a phenomenal mood. Everybody's coming to the party. It's great. But the minute we get home, the second we walk through the door, Megan wanted to sign onto MySpace. She wanted to see the Josh response. So I signed her on. I said, you've got a few minutes. I've got to take your sister to orthodontist. When I signed her on, the message from Josh came in late the night before and said, you hurt me. No one likes you. No one wants to be friends with you. And Megan was responded, why are you saying this? Who's telling you this? What? You know, and started going back and forth. And I yelled in. I said, Meg, you've got to sign off. I've got to leave. She said, Mom, please let me finish this last message, and I will. Now, typically I never did that, but I was in a rush this day, and I left. I called Megan two different times from the orthodontist office. Her dad had been upstairs sleeping at the time. Both times she was crying. I kept saying, please get off the MySpace, Megan, please. I will be home. I got home. I walked in the house. She was still sobbing at the computer, and I told her to get up. I looked at the messages from Josh to Megan, Megan to Josh. Now, Josh got two other girls involved. The things that went back and forth were just humiliating, mean, cool messages. They went from, we don't like you, to Megan Meyer is a blank blank. Megan Meyer is this. Megan at this time now was trying to defend herself. And, you know, Megan was now trying to reach out to other people to help. And I, as a mom, had talked to her very clearly about when we got this, you know, about her response to other people, whether they're negative or not, and how she really has to control that.
Yes.
So I had looked at these messages and I said, Meg, you're not any of these things that they're calling you, but we've talked about you lashing back and saying things now to them. You know I don't approve of that. And I said, if you would have signed off when I told you to, it would have turned into this huge explosion. And she looked at me crying and she said, Mom, who's going to believe me? They're going to believe them. It's going to everybody at my old school, everybody at my new school. No one's going to believe me. And she said, you're supposed to be my mom. You're supposed to be on my side. And she took off running upstairs to her room. I went up into the kitchen to talk to her dad. Probably 20 minutes passed, and I just got this horrible feeling that ran through my body. I took off running upstairs to Megan's room, opened the door, and I found Megan hanging in her closet. We called 911. Megan was transported to Children's Hospital in a coma. They did get her heart and her breathing to start with assistance. She was transported to Children's Hospital. But 24 hours later, Megan passed away on October 17th, 2006. Megan was weeks from being 14.
That, Tina Meyer, that is truly one of the most heartbreaking stories I have ever heard. And I can guarantee you the people in the audience of Trisha's True Crime Radio feel exactly the same way. Now, we do have a quick question. Was Megan, the subject of the movie about cyberbullying, was that story about her situation?
Yes.
Okay, that was.
The writer originally, it was going to be about Megan's story through ABC Family, but one of the executives, somebody felt that her story was going to be too heavy, too much. And that's when I really worked, you know, I gave the writer a lot of different scenarios. So Megan was really intertwined. That's why the girl's name was Taylor. They used Megan's middle name. And a lot of the situations that they dealt with the legislation, the school, and all of those things were different examples of things that I had encountered or other people had encountered. So, yes, it was.
We're talking with Tina Meyer. Tina Meyer's daughter, Megan, killed herself after being cyberbullied by teenagers her own age, yes, but also by an adult. And that is what is we are talking about now, is the adult. So, Tina, let's talk about the adult. in this case,
sure.
Lori Drew. Now, Lori claims right. she didn't do anything, but let's talk about how she came into all of this.
Right. You know, Megan and Sarah, her daughter, Sarah Drew, had been friends since the fourth grade. And Lori and I would talk because of the girls' friendship, because they would spend the night at each other's house.
Uh-huh.
Megan even went on a couple of family vacations with them. I sold them a house that I was a real estate agent at the time, and I sold them a house, four houses down the street.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Megan and Sarah's friendship in the seventh grade was really kind of up and down. Megan was really just trying to figure out where to fit in and what to do. And truly, Sarah did absolutely adore Megan. Sarah was a very meek, very timid child. If someone said, you step to the right, Sarah stepped to the right. Where Megan was more of that out-of-the-box type kid.
Sure.
When their friendship started separating, Lori Drew would drive down the street or call me and ask why Megan wasn't talking to her daughter, why Megan was this. They felt that Megan would talk to her daughter one day and then another day wouldn't spend time with her. And overall, they felt like Megan was using their daughter's friendship. I knew how many times friendships... they go up and down, and if I would have ever thought
sure.
Megan was abusing her friendship, I would have certainly said something. And I did talk to Megan. I did say, Meg, listen, you know, a friend is there. You know, you cannot have a friend one day and then completely ignore them the next day. That's not okay. So you need to really pay attention. So at the end of the day, though, they truly wanted to mold friends for Sarah. And if Sarah was not content with somebody else, they were upset about that. Well, their
mm-hmm.
friendship really separated between the summer of 7th and 8th grade. And going into that 8th grade year, they really didn't talk, even though they lived down the street from each other. The family heard that Megan had called her daughter a lesbian. I have no clue if Megan did or didn't, because she was not perfect. And if I would have known, I would have told her, knock it off. You know,
and
we
Tina,
don't talk
let's
about
just,
people like that.
And Tina, let's just say, you know what, kids say stupid, mean stuff like that. And it's all part of growing up, and it's part of the parents' job to say, no, you can't do that. But, you know, people have, kids have called my son names, and I'm sure vice versa. You don't
right.
freak out and you know, go out for revenge and go out for the throat. So anyway,
right.
Lori Drew's daughter, supposedly Megan called her a lesbian, which, you know, big deal. But anyway, I'm sorry, continue. It's just so frustrating for me. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, you're fine. I mean, it is. You know, these things happen all of the time. And if you jump into every single situation with girls, especially, you're
yes.
riding a roller coaster with them. They many times work it out on their own within a day or two. But at this point, you know, I just kind of told Megan, you're doing great and wonderful. Move forward with what you're doing. Do not get yourself involved in other things. So what we had heard was that they felt that they wanted to gain Megan's confidence to find out if
mm-hmm.
Megan was truly talking about her daughter behind her back. That is what was stated, that they found this good-looking boy online. They took his picture. They created an account that would really make, because they knew Megan was a sucker for people who struggled.
Mm-hmm.
And they really, in a police statement, said that Lori Drew said they wanted to gain Megan's confidence to find out if Megan was talking about her daughter behind her back.
Mm-hmm.
See, we had no clue that they were involved during this 5 weeks after Megan passed away. I didn't know who Josh Evans was. I didn't know what happened. The account was deleted. But we got called to a meeting about Megan's death on Thanksgiving weekend. And when we walked in, we had everybody sat there and told us that they had information that Lori Drew, her daughter Sarah, and an 18-year-old girl, Ashley, that worked at that mom's house part-time, were actually Josh Evans, that they had created this account. And it
what
was
did you think?
Truly...
What? I mean, I would have just killed me. I don't think I could have breathed.
I think that they were, at the time, more concerned with, at that time, my husband, worrying about anger. But I think he was probably more in shock at the time, where I was the one literally on fire. Literally,
mm-hmm.
all I could think about, I didn't hear anything else that anybody else said to me. All I heard were those words. When I walked into that room with these people in a circle, I said, so tell me the Josh Evans account was fake. Is that what you're going to tell me? And then once they told me it was Laura Drew, that's all I had to hear. And all I wanted to do was get home and literally get my hands around her. That was it.
I don't blame you.
I could think of nothing else. Because how could you do that to this child? I mean, why? Why would somebody do that? It's beyond the normal person. We get upset, we get hurt and all that, but it's beyond normal people. That is, normal adults do not do that.
When you heard it was Lori Drew, when you heard it was Lori Drew, after perhaps as you had time to reflect on this, did it really surprise you, or did you go, okay, I see, I get it? Did it really shock you that it was her, that she could do something like this?
It did not shock me that she could do something like that. Lori was a, to say the least, a really very unhappy woman in an unhappy mm-hmm. marriage. Nothing ever was right for her. She complained nonstop. I think that Lori Drew looked at my friendship, my friends in the neighborhood, and my relationship, and all she saw were colorful flowers on her end. You know, she mm-hmm. thought that we felt that we had the perfect life and our friends, and she always wanted to try to get involved, but at the end of the day, to simply state it, no one could stand being around her. And so mm-hmm. even the neighbors in the neighborhood would, like, go in their backyard or go back in their house when she was around. I mean, she was just a constant complainer. And so
she was that
even looking
miserable.
Back at it, yeah, she was that miserable. Even looking back at it now, it just does not, it really does not shock me, because they truly do not believe they did anything wrong.
And
they
see,
believe
that's
that they
still
were
just absolutely appalling. And we're going to get to that they didn't believe they did anything wrong. So, but I'm sorry, finish your sentence, what you're going to say.
No, true psychotic behavior. Those mm-hmm. types of beliefs that you are doing something and that you have not done anything wrong is truly psychotic. And, you know, I think that with Lori Drew, I mean, to even give you a true picture, with talking about normal people who would have had guilt and really known about this, we were going 5 weeks without having a clue. These mm-hmm. people, Lori and her family, came to Megan's wake and funeral. They, you know, invited us to their daughter Sarah's birthday party because I still had no clue they were involved. And I felt bad for Sarah because Sarah had always adored Megan, even though their friendship kind of fell apart. I still wanted to support Sarah because I knew she was destroyed.
Yeah.
Well, you know, stupidly, I had no clue. You know, we did go down, and I bought her a present. I mean, I don't know what I wasn't even thinking. I walked down
there.
Well,
yeah, you were in shock.
3 days, yeah, 3 days after Megan's, and we had just went to the mausoleum to celebrate Megan's birthday, and we're singing happy birthday at this house that they had the entire time had sat there and created this entire joke against my daughter. They'd asked us to store a foosball table in the garage for their kids for Christmas so that their kids could be surprised. I mean, it's those types of behaviors. They invited us to their husband's 50th birthday party, begging us, just please come on. It means so much to us. It is really a sickening behavior because they truly enjoyed seeing the absolute despair and grief that we were in, because for them, they were finally on top. And they were the ones that, you know, and so I think that is a true psychopath sickness that she has. And I think both of them. I think both of them are absolutely psychotic.
They are. And Tina, I just want to kind of recap what you've just said, because it's absolutely stunning. We're talking with Tina Meyer, whose daughter Megan Meyer killed herself in 2006 after receiving several very cruel messages on a MySpace page, and those messages were generated by an adult and her daughter and their friends because they want to find out what Megan was saying about her daughter. It's so childish. So now Megan has passed away, and these people are just right in your life, basically in your face, saying, hey, we need a favor from you. You have no idea that they had anything to do with it, and they're saying, we need you to store our foosball thing and come to my husband's 50th birthday party. And yet they were kind of soaking in the fact that you had this wonderful, glorious life, and now you're broken, and they were kind of enjoying that in their sick, twisted way. So take us to the day that you found out that it was Lori?
That day it was Thanksgiving weekend. Like I said, I was going to try to go to a grief support meeting that morning because I was just struggling just to breathe. And we did get this call. And we got this call saying, we must have you attend. It's an extremely important meeting. And I was frustrated, angry. And we got this. We went to that meeting, and that's when I walked in and said, so you're telling me that this Josh Evans account was fake? And the woman who told me said, yes, her daughter and Sarah had been friends. And the mom found out about this account after Megan passed away. You see, Lori Drew, her daughter Sarah, and this other girl, they would go to PSR classes. And if people are not, the ironic part about this, if they're not Catholic or don't know, PSR classes are religion classes that girls or, you know, that students can go to be able to get their first, or to be able to get their,
confirmation? The confirmation?
Yeah, there we go. Yeah.
Right. I was
so
Catholic,
they,
so
they
yeah.
Were, yeah. So they would go to these classes, and when they would go to these classes, Lori would be driving in the van, and they, her and Sarah would be talking and laughing about this. Well, that this other
wait,
girl
wait, they'd be talking and
it.
Laughing about Megan's death, or talking, or this was before she was killed?
This was before she passed away. They talked,
okay, so
they would laugh about the Josh Evans account. They thought it was funny that Megan really thought he was cute. They thought all of that was funny. Well, the night that Megan, the ambulance came down the street and Megan had taken her own life, Lori Drew got on the phone and called over to the neighbor's house and spoke with the mom and asked to speak to her daughter. She spoke to the daughter and she told her to keep her mouth shut about the MySpace account. That girl, then Lori Drew instructed the 18-year-old and her daughter to delete the MySpace account, delete that Josh Evans account immediately because she knew something happened.
The
mom across the street had no clue what was going on, but she started seeing her daughter's behavior really disintegrate immediately. And her daughter finally told her what she knew about it and what was going on. This mother confronted Lori Drew and her husband and said, you better tell the Myers. You need to come clean. You need to do something. Her daughter, in the meantime, is just completely spun into this huge state of depression, feeling like she should have done something. And Lori Drew and her husband said that they didn't feel it was a right time. They were going to maybe have to talk to an attorney. And so this woman, gratefully, and her daughter were the ones that finally said, they have to know the truth. We can't wait anymore. We've got to let them know. When we found out, we headed literally straight back to our house. At the time, we'd had an outpour of neighbors and family that were there at the time, really to hold us back from going down to physically harming Lori.
I don't blame you. I don't blame you. I don't think anybody blames you one single bit. Now, didn't your husband destroy the foosball that set that they were that you were hiding for them?
We took that foosball table out, and it sounds ridiculous now, but it was just you're in such a state of shock and unrest.
What else could you do? That's the only thing you could do.
Yeah. Right, yeah, because we kept being told, you have another daughter, you have another daughter. Don't do anything stupid. You have another daughter. So we took the foosball table out, and literally, I think we grabbed an axe and sledgehammer and literally beat this thing into pieces. We loaded it up. We took it down. We pushed it all out behind their van, and I spray painted Merry Christmas on the box. And they started walking up the street, Lori Drew, Kurt Drew, and their daughter. They brought this girl up there. That's how sick this is. They brought her up there with their hands in the air like, what's going on? And one of our neighbors walked down and pointed to them and said, you better leave now. If you know what's good for you and your family, you better turn around and leave. The Drews then, at that point, called the police department. They wanted to file a charge against us for destruction of personal property. Police officer got there, Lori Drew said she wanted to share her side of the story of why this all happened. That's when in the statement, the police report, she stated that she and Ashley Grills and her daughter Sarah created this account to find out if Megan was talking about her daughter to gain her confidence. That was the whole start of it. You know, and here's the thing that I always explain to people. I don't think that these three, and the husband knew about it. He wasn't a part of, like, you know, creating all of it, but Kurt Drew knew about this. they didn't know that Megan was going to take her own life. This was a joke. This was funny to them. They thought it was hilarious. But mm-hmm. to them, you know, these are the tragic things that can happen. These are the things when you play with an emotional state of another person. These are tragedies that can happen. And, you know,
just absolutely dumbfounded that there is an adult out there that would somehow think this was okay and funny to do to another child. And then when it happened, how they couldn't just fall apart and beg for forgiveness is beyond me. But that's just the point of the radio show tonight on Trisha's True Crime Radio. And that is cyber harassment and cyber bully. There's something wrong with these people. Now, granted, when it's kids, they're still learning. They don't know the consequences of their actions. But when the adults get in there, when the older adults get in there and start behaving like this, it's a sign of something seriously wrong. And you're right. There's something seriously wrong with those two parents and, God help, any of their kids. So Lori Drew wants to tell her side of why she created this MySpace page, which led to the death, a suicide of your daughter, Megan Meyer. Then what happens?
Really, from that point, we went to an attorney. We were in connection with the FBI. The FBI investigated this case. Lori Drew gave them her computer. She talked to them for hours. They had everything to trace back and forth where these transmissions were coming from. But mm-hmm. unfortunately, they went up to all the way to Washington, and even after their investigation, said, listen, there's not a law. There's nothing. And, you know, we even spoke about the Violence Against Women's Act, which,
well,
talked about.
It says that you cannot harass or annoy somebody. And I don't know why they couldn't use that law. It's a law that President Bush signed into effect. It's a Violence Against Women's Law, and it involves telecommunications. And you can't use telecommunications to annoy or harass another human being. And they said that they couldn't use that because it wasn't a telephone, it was an internet. Was that it?
I never got a true, clear answer, honestly. I mean, we were determined because we called the White House, we called, you name it. I asked a million and one times about why can't we? It's right here. Somebody give me an explanation of why. And then you end up beating your head against the wall so many times that you figure you're going to go another direction, which was... Mm-hmm. You know, really, we realized that there were no laws currently in the state of Missouri, because that's a federal law, but, you know, the Women's mm-hmm. Against Violence Act. We did get the laws changed back in 2008 to include Internet harassment and Internet stalking. They amended those two laws. And there's a juvenile component and also a felony component for the adults. You know, and we went to a federal trial in Los Angeles. The U.S. attorney out there, Thomas O'Brien, truly mm-hmm. heard about the case and truly felt that it was an injustice, that something had to be done. And because MySpace's headquarters were there, that they really, truly felt that they could make a statement. And the, you know, federal grand jury indicted Lori Drew on 4 charges. They were to accessing the computer, an unauthorized computer, and it was also violating the terms of service. Mm-hmm. Now, in 2008 of November, the jury found her guilty but of 3 misdemeanors, and then mm-hmm. in July of 2009, the judge ultimately overturned the case, stating that too many people lie on social networking sites. It would be unconstitutional. So here's the thing. At the end of the day, did Lori Drew serve a day in jail? No. But I truly believe from the bottom of my heart that she and her husband and family have to serve a lifetime of who they are.
Yes.
And I truly believe that karma does come back around. I don't wish negative things on anybody because I don't want bad karma. But I truly mm-hmm. believe that if you are a mean, nasty, horrible person and you want vengeance on other people, that it will circle back around and you will live in this life of just pure misery. And I truly believe that's what they do. And I don't want to be there anymore. We've moved on with this foundation, and you know, going out and spreading the word is much more therapeutic than sitting there and being angry and mad at people to me who are useless.
Did you sue Lori Drew's family?
We did not do a civil suit. And the reason is, after we had went through everything we went through, with not only the media, because that was never planned. You know, it just, from one local newspaper article trying to get the laws changed, it blew up into this, you know, it's just sometimes why do things take a hold on and why sometimes they don't. This one took a hold. And between that and between the FBI investigation and the, you know, the trial in Los Angeles, by the time I sat there and I looked at Lori Drew for the last time at the last sentencing hearing, I truly stated to myself that when I've looked at her this many times and she shows no ounce of remorse, the woman took the fifth, she put her daughter up on the stand instead of her. That tells you another state of what a mother does. Threw her daughter and the 18-year-old under the bus, not her, though. Did not cry one time while her child stood there in the stand and cried the entire time. I looked at her and I thought, this isn't even about this woman anymore. I mean, Lori Drew is completely useless. I'm not going to spend another day angry and mad. I'm going to move forward. From this point, whatever this judge says, I'm moving forward to this foundation because Megan was so much more than that. And I want to use her story as a segue into helping other parents and educators and students who are struggling and give them that voice, letting them know it's okay to reach out and help educate on Internet safety and the you know, the different things that they can do to protect themselves. And that's really what we have done that's been the driving force since really 2008. When the trial happened, and then definitely from 2009 when the jury overturned it.
We're talking with Tina Meyer. Tina Meyer's daughter, Megan, killed herself after receiving horrible messages from what she thought was a young boy, her boy her age, from MySpace, when in fact it was set up by a neighbor down the street. And her daughter, an adult, set this up and decided to harass and bully Megan because the mother felt, Lori Drew felt that Megan was saying mean things about her daughter. So she went to this extent to get even with Megan, which is just infuriating. Lori Drew was charged. The judge, she was found guilty, if I remember. And then the judge overturned it. The Meyers decided not to sue the Drew family. Instead, Tina, you have put your energy into the Megan Meyer Foundation. Tell us about the foundation and what you do.
You know, the foundation really started as a basic thought of I wanted to help other kids, but I really didn't know how to do that. My aunt and my other friend really were my driving force, saying, listen, Tina, go do another interview. Go do this. You can do this. If you keep doing this, another kid's going to listen, and you're going to give them hope, and another parent's going to listen. You've got to keep doing this. And so I started. I went to one school. I was asked to go speak, and I spoke to 900 middle school students. And
wow.
It just really started spiraling, where I travel across the country and do presentations. And it's really more of not just a lecture to students. It's really, I try to relate to them and understand the things that they're going through. And then we do a question and answer. And I do breakout sessions afterwards to really talk to them candidly and openly about what they're going through and how is it affecting them and what are we as adults doing right and what are we doing wrong and what can be done to really get them involved and thinking and taking some control over this. And it's really the most amazing part about it is, you know, it's long days. It's purely emotional. You know, even though I push Megan kind of in a different place when I'm working and doing that because I can't stop the entire time. It is so overwhelming when we get a student who will send an email or who will come up visibly shaking or ask to talk to us that they reach out for help. We many times identify at-risk kids. These kids that otherwise have never told anybody about what they're going through, that they have attempted or they have suicidal ideations or they are going through many different situations. And, you know, the one thing that we always want to make sure that people understand is not every kid who's bullied or cyberbullied, that is absolutely means that they are going to, you know, self-harm or have suicidal ideations.
Sure.
It's other factors many times that contribute to this storm that happens. You know, but that's the part where when you get done and you sit and you talk to them and they hug you, the tightest hug, and you're then able to get them to the school counselor and help them get the parents to get them the help, whereas you walk away thinking, okay, this is why we do this. This is why, because it's one other child, and one other child is like, thank you. And sometimes it's the parents that come up and say, my kid came home from school today, and they're a teenager, they're in high school, and they don't talk to me about anything, but they sat there with, you know, talking the entire time, could not stop talking and saying, you've got to go up there, Mom, and I want to talk to you about some things that are going on. And so it's many times opening up this dialogue for parents and kids, and that's an amazing part. We do trainings for school resource officers and police departments. We do it for educators and psychologists and counselors, and it's really just, it's a community of all, at a whole, is really what we have to do, because we all have a connection to really work on this. And I think that the more that we're, you know, we truly believe in our foundation, awareness is phenomenal, but we have to then educate, then create positive change. And so one of our big pushes is when we go into school to really identify some kids who can be peer leaders, and not the stereotypical type that you think of, just the ones who are always in student council. We want kids who sometimes have that leadership ability, but they're using it in the wrong direction. How can we turn them
to
different things?
Do you get kids come up and saying to you, you know, I'm not being bullied, but I think I'm doing the bullying? Do you ever get those type of kids? That, to me, that is a big turnaround, because yes, you're getting the ones that are being bullied, and that's great, but boy, to grab somebody that is doing the bullying and getting them to realize how harmful, tell us about that.
You know, that I think is amazing when it happens. Many times it is boys who will come up extremely distraught, extremely frustrated, kind of confused, where they just, it's like they've been hit in the head with a brick. Like, I'm the one that's been doing this. I'm, you know, and they're really upset. They're really very distraught over the fact and don't know how to really start making that change. And we talk to them about acknowledging it first is the huge step. That's the big thing. You know,
sure.
If you have an ability to make a change, you don't have to always be that kid. And, you know, we do get girls many times that will come up and say, I didn't realize, you know, I knew I was joking around, and sometimes I think it's funny, but I didn't realize what I really could do, how much I could hurt another person with words. And, you know, some of them that came up to me afterwards and said, we haven't talked for 2 months, and we just went into the bathroom and talked about how dumb this is over a boy or over this. This is so stupid. And so those are the things that, like I said, I mean, that breakthrough to me is what is the amazing part, and getting kids to really understand where they're at and what the things that they're saying. I mean, it just, you know, it really is amazing stuff. We do workshops where we're doing one actually, and Megan's birthday should be 21 on November 6th, and so we're going to do one in the city of St. Louis. For some city of St. Louis kids that many times don't get these type of programs, and you know, when I go do the presentations, it's not all the heavy down and horrible stuff. Yes, it is sad, but it's really more of an inspirational story. It's more of a story of from things, from tragedies. From this, we have an ability to all make a choice. We have an ability to either use our words and send messages in a negative way, or we have an ability to be able to send something to step up and help another person when you see them struggling, or say something nice to that person that's in the hallway. And so it's really, we try to get it turned around and really get that peer-to-peer acceptance,
right?
Because that's where you're going to get a change in the culture in the school.
We have a couple of questions concerning Lori Drew, the woman in your neighborhood. First of all, did Lori or anybody on her side ever actually apologize to you face-to-face?
No.
Okay.
She, first of all, couldn't get close enough to me face-to-face. Secondly, they did send a letter, a handwritten letter, that is out there stating that they're sorry for what happened, to Megan, that they feel that we, put a lot of responsibility on them as the parents, that they really wanted to share and explain their side of the story. To me, that was ridiculous. There were no words, nothing that the woman could say or do from that point in time to try to explain your side. There is no side.
She doesn't have a side, exactly.
Right. There is nothing that she could have possibly said that would have changed that. So, no, I mean, mm-hmm. absolutely not.
And do they still live in the neighborhood?
No, they actually moved right before the trial. So around November of 2008, they moved to Springfield, Illinois. Mm-hmm. So everybody was pretty grateful that lived in that subdivision and community. They were grateful that they had moved out. So that was a positive for sure.
Yeah, and you know what's interesting? Somebody in our chat room bringing this up, and this is what I've always tried to talk to my son about. When he was growing up, I said, honey, if somebody's bullying you, it's because something's going on at home. There's something wrong with that kid, and that's why you need to tell. Not because you want to be a tattletale, but because you want to help that child. That child, there's something going on. Their parents are being mean to them, or somebody else is being mean to them. And that's the case, especially in this case. You know, the mom taught the kids how to bully. And I'm sure the community was thrilled when they finally left. But and I don't know, Tina, if you are aware of other things that are going on the internet with cyber harassment and adults, because I think we're all shocked at how Lori Drew so heartlessly did what she did and helped contribute to your daughter's death. But one thing, and perhaps you've even seen it in people emailing you or posting about your foundation, we have adults out here all over the world that, because they can hide behind a computer, they feel that they can say whatever they want, no matter how cruel or how untruthful. Have you seen a lot of this on the internet when you've gone out and about and seen, they're all, you know, that I know of, they're all pretty much adults. Do you know what I'm referring to?
Right. Oh, I absolutely do. And believe me, I have been barraged with those things, especially when the story is in the media or mm-hmm. if I go into a different city, you know, And I will tell you the way I have to approach it is I remember a news reporter, I think it was on the national level, was at the house after about a year after Megan passed away and said, listen, if you're going to step out and you're going to do anything in this world and use your voice, 50% of the people want to see you succeed, but 50% want to see you fail. If you focus on that 50% at all, you're never going to make it. And mm-hmm. I remember literally from that point on, that I really, now, yes, when I see blogs or when I get emails or when I get things sometimes posted on Facebook or different places, yes, do I still get those things? Yes, I do. The way I take it is instantly I can take things personal for a minute. You know, the most recent one that I have seen, and like I said, I very rarely ever, unless I scroll down too far to see a comment, but I mm-hmm. don't look at any of that stuff. And it said, it was up in Connecticut, and I was speaking to students, and obviously a mom put on there that she couldn't believe that the school had spent money to have some grieving mother come in, take some educational time out of her children's class time or school day to sit there and mourn about her child. Go cry about her somewhere else.
Oh, my God.
When you have stuff like that, it's instantly, you want to instantly defend yourself, like, does she have any clue of what I did or why I do this? It's not
right.
You know, for a minute you can get snowballed into that, and then I literally am just like, absolutely not. I mean, I do not reply to them, do not respond, I do not acknowledge it, and I move on, because at the end of the day, that's a minor one that I've heard. People sent mm-hmm. messages talking about, I'm sure that Tina Meyer is glad that that big fat, you know, what is gone. Now she doesn't have to feed her anymore. Or this, or that. You name it, it's been out there.
Oh, and my God.
I truly believe that we have a, yes, when we grow up, we're supposed to be adults. But remember, many times we have kids who do struggle and have many issues, self-esteem issues, mental issues, diagnosed and undiagnosed. You know, other expectations, things that they feel that they aren't getting, and they just grow up into adult bodies, but it does not mean that their behavior is what an adult behavior should be. And so mm-hmm. I believe that many times these are just these kids that still are whining and crying and mad and angry at the entire world, and they use this venue because it's safer for them to do it face-to-face, because if you really want to confront somebody, you do it face-to-face to talk to them. and you
That's
work
the
it
biggest
out.
Thing.
But they
right.
use
That's...
this way to say things that they would not say face-to-face. And that's the true thing where I feel that I'm not going to fight with somebody who is cowardly, somebody mm-hmm. who is uneducated about a topic or a situation that's just going to throw ridiculous opinions or statements out there. They're not worth my time. What's worth my time is the kid that I connected with or the parents, and that's truly what I focus on. And I know it might be harder for some other people. It's just the way I really have worked very hard at letting those people go and, mm-hmm. you know, really praying that they find some peace somewhere in their life to not be such negative, mean people. But at the end of the day, I focus on the positive.
And you have to, because that's the way that you will get through all of this and get through your day. But Tina Meyer, I agree. What shocks me is how brave these people are behind the computer when they're anonymous. Not one of them would have the
right.
courage to come up to you or to post their real name and say, hey, my name's so-and-so, and this is where I live, and here's what I think. No, they're cowards. But these are
right.
adult people, and that is what kills me. So, Tina, tell us the address of your foundation again, and do you have anything coming up in the future that maybe we could help you with? So give us your address.
Sure. Our web address is www.MeganMeyerFoundation.org, and it's
and
M-E-G-A-N.
Meyer is spelled differently, so.
Yes. Yeah, so it's MeganMeyerFoundation.org. And, you know, as far as the cyber harassment, truly we do get calls many times in our offices. We get calls from adults who are really struggling really, really badly and don't know where to turn. And the hardest thing is that there is more help out there with internet crimes against children and different things. But when it gets to an adult, I will tell you where you hit the block is in the concrete wall. Is where many times people think this is just something emotional, just who cares, close it up, you're an adult, get over it. You know,
mm-hmm.
kids, they can understand a little bit more, but when it's an adult, they really have much less compassion when it's
right.
happening to them because they think just grow up. And so it is, we absolutely do get calls in from adults who are really struggling, and we give them the best resources that we can and advice, but, you know, if anybody wants to find out more about our foundation, absolutely they can. We're going to do a huge annual giving to really help with some programming and different things in November because of her birthday. So we'll be putting that stuff out there. But, you know, it's really spreading the word and I think really talking to your kids about, you know, truly, you know, how they can behave online along with how they deal with other situations and, you know, for kids to really stop and think about the things they say and things that they text and really will start
exactly.
making some positive step with.
And parents, if your kid is the bully, there's something going on. That's just a symptom. That isn't the end all. That's a symptom of something else going on in their lives. So you need to stop and look at that and perhaps look at yourself as well. Tina Meyer, it has been such a pleasure. And, again, our hearts go out to you. Megan was a lovely, lovely girl, and you truly are making her proud. And if there's anything we can ever do, if you ever need a group of people, we're a good group. We're kind of like the silent army from all over the world. We're there to help you in any way we can. Okay, Tina?
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for having me, and I do appreciate it.
Thank you, Tina. You take care now.
All right. You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Oh, Michael in Minnesota and Vicky, are you both with me, I hope, still?
I'm here.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
I know. Michael in Minnesota. Vicky, we're going to get to your story in just a little bit. But I want to go to Michael first. Michael, my unofficial official co-host. You know, hearing that story and hearing about Lori Drew, how Tina can remain so calm is beyond me because I'm sitting here, I have my fingernails jabbed into my skin. I am so angry at this woman. But I'm telling you, Michael, I know people like her, not that I've known anybody that has harassed a child, but I know people that would cyber harass somebody, and then if they reacted to it and harmed themselves, they would take no responsibility for it. Not my fault. I see it day in and day out. And Michael, you, my friend, have one of the most unusual stories, and we're not going to get into any of the details, but, you know, here we have Lori Drew harassing Megan Meyer because she's thinking that Megan is talking about her daughter. There's other all kinds of terrible harassment going on over very emotional issues, politics. We're going to talk to Vicki about George Zimmerman and what happened in her life when she started blogging about the George Zimmerman story. Very emotional issues. But Michael in Minnesota has been cyber harassed horribly by people in a knitting group. I'm talking K-N-I-T-I-N-G. They knit, and he has been horribly harassed. Michael, just tell us a little bit about that and what's happened since all of this went down.
Well, first of all, I've got a comment on the whole Megan thing. You know, a parent's intuition to want to help their child, and I'm talking about that horrible Lori, mm-hmm. I can see maybe why they initially did it. Let's find out if she is in fact saying these things. But
sure.
Then to take it to the cruel level and have the result that they had and still feel justified,
mm-hmm.
absolutely mind-blowing. That's where the whole thing derails so terribly.
Absolutely.
My heart broke for her. I don't know. It takes a special kind of person, I think, to be able to let things wash off their back. I'm far too sensitive. So when people say things about me, I know they're crazy. I know they're doing things anonymously. But it hurts. It hurts
it
me
does.
Terribly. As far as the knitting group, I gave you the whole backstory, and I won't bore the audience with it.
But it just kills
me
that it's knitting. It just kills me.
Yeah, I know. You'd think, what a bunch of fiber artists. Do you think they would be cool and mellow and maybe smoking a doobie or something? I don't know.
You would think their grandma's knitting or something, but my God, these are just vicious people. But go ahead, continue.
Right. So I was a member. There's a Ravelry knitting group, just as Web Sleuths is for crime sleuths. Mm-hmm. The Ravelry knitting group, it's an international group of people. And I developed a lot of friends and had a lot of followers, and it was just a really pleasant place, and it's a great resource for knitters. It's just an amazing place. But anyway, I ended up with someone who really wanted to be my friend or to jump on my bandwagon. And as I told you, that the whole thing was just bizarre. She ended up being kicked off Ravelry for her behavior and kept coming back with new identities. Well, in the meantime, every time she would do something like a lunatic, my many friends would come to my defense. Well, this irritated many to no end, to the extent that they put up a blog, the Michael James Watch blog, and one of the people, even, I haven't shared with your audience, but I have lived with HIV now for 30 years, and I'm very open and honest about it, and Ravelry was no different. I believe it was even in my profile for a while. But anyway, one of the people posted on this blog in a comment that they hoped, or they looked forward to the day I succumbed to my disease so they could dance and sing in joy that I had
finally
died.
Dear Holy Mother of God, and that is an
right.
adult. That is an adult. Oh,
and you know,
my God.
I tell you, you know, again, you. I understand everything that we were hearing from your first guest about letting things wash, but there are some things that are so cruel that I really have a difficult time letting those things wash. I don't know. I'm not as good at it, and I wish I could somehow get better at it. But it's hurtful. It's hurtful.
It's horribly hurtful. And like Vicki said, I'm sure they said it anonymously, of course. They would never come up and tell you. Yeah, never come up and say that to your face. And that's what bothers me. And that's one of the reasons we're having this show tonight. Now, granted, Michael, what we've been through is nothing compared to what Tina has been through at all. And I'm not even coming close to suggesting that that's the case. But, Michael, like you said, it hurts. And you lay awake
it
at night. And
terrible.
You think, what have I done to this person? And I don't even read 99% of the stuff that's written about me. I'm not even going to go into the stuff written about me. 99% of it isn't true. It's rumor that's been built upon and built upon and built upon. And, you know, I believe there needs to be tougher laws, that if you're going to come on and say something horrible about somebody, you have to own that, and it has to be yours, and we have to know who you are. And it's one thing to offer your opinion that you don't agree with somebody. It's a whole other thing to say, I can't wait till that person dies, till their HIV turns into AIDS and they die and I can dance on their grave. That's a whole other deal. I'm going to tell you briefly a story, and I think this is a very wise story, and it has a great lesson for everybody. This was right after I purchased Web Sleuth. I'm not sure if it was 2005, right around there. I bought it in 2004. This guy comes on the JonBenet Ramsey forum, and he throws out this name. I'm not even going to say who it is. It's, you wouldn't even know him. He's that far removed, but he's a friend of John Ramsey's, JonBenet's father. And this poster posts this guy's name and said, this guy wrote the letter, and here's why. Well, it was just ridiculous. It stayed on Web Sleuth for a couple of hours, and then one of our moderators saw it and removed it. I got a letter from Lynn Wood and a subpoena. He not only wanted the internet provider address and any information that we had on that particular poster, he wanted all the personal information on the moderators of the JonBenet Ramsey forum. And that's where I fought him. The poster just happened to benefit from it. So it cost over $4,000. There wasn't 1 second spent in court. But basically, my lawyer ended up telling Lynn Wood or Lynn Wood's associate, hey, Trisha's not going to give you anything. She's going to, it was a civil subpoena. It was not a criminal. She's going to ignore the civil subpoena, and there you go. Well, I got a hold of the poster, and I said, listen, you son of a bitch, you're costing thousands of dollars because of your stupid, ridiculous theory, and you're posting anonymously. Have the kahunas man up and call Lynn Wood and tell him your name. And by God, he did. He called him up, and
wow.
I know, I was stunned. And so, fortunately, Lynn Wood didn't bother us anymore. But I'm saying this to the people on the JonBenet Ramsey forum or on any other forum who think they can just throw out a name there and say, yeah, I think they did it, or yeah, I think they're involved. You can't do that anymore. That's wrong. And there's going to be a lawyer that's going to send me or Sue, our co-owner, both of us, are going to send us a civil subpoena. And guess what? I'm not going to fight it this time. I'm going to give them the information. If people out there insist on throwing out innocent people and claiming they did horrible crimes, I'm not going to stop a civil subpoena ever again. I will if they go after the moderators. That will not. I will not stand for that. But you have to own your words, people. And I know there are people listening right now who have cyber harassed. They're listening purposely because they know I was doing this show. You have got to understand that your words have power. You may not think they do, but they hold a big power. And it hurts a person's heart and soul to read those horrible things. But then people go even further. I've had people call Mark Klass. I've had people contact my work anonymously. I don't know who they are. To trash me, like my work would care how I if I ban somebody on a forum. It's ridiculous. And that takes me to Vicky. Vicky, my darling, wonderful friend. I have two of my favorite people on the show tonight, Michael and Vicky. And Vicky, early on, you were one of the first people I know that stood up and said, look, people, Trayvon Martin was not this innocent kid that everybody thinks he is. George Zimmerman was fighting for his life. Am I correct?
Yes.
Okay. And you and I didn't agree with you. I was absolutely convinced that Trayvon was this innocent 17-year-old and George Zimmerman was his Yahoo, that he should be put in jail for life. I was so wrong. But you, Vicky, were one of the first people to post about it on your blog. And you were one of the first people that said, hey, look at this evidence. And you took and followed the evidence. You weren't just out there willy-nilly throwing stuff out there and saying, here's what I think, and I think this just because, I mean, you had evidence. It was hardcore, black and white, end of story evidence that you were presenting people, just trying to get them to see this side of the story. It wasn't like you were invading their house. You weren't going to their workplace. You weren't calling them. You had a blog. They came to you. You were just saying, hey, look at this. Give us a rundown of what started to happen to you.
Well, it started actually on Web Sleuths when we were discussing the case. And as you know, they closed the thread down because it became so
volatile.
Everybody
it was volatile.
Fighting.
We couldn't do
yeah,
it.
Yeah, it was very volatile. Yeah. And but it was just because I disagreed. That's all. It didn't matter what I said. I could have shown them the video, and they would have still disagreed. They'd disagree to this day. But so I started, when y'all closed down Web Sleuths, I started a blog. And they started coming to my blog. And but I did say, it doesn't happen so much on my blog, because I said I could read their IP addresses, you know, if they came on there, even anonymously, which I don't know if it's true or not. So if y'all want to bully me, go ahead. But, I mean, at first, I mean, like, the first person, again, you know me. You've known me for years. I'm not a racist.
No, not at all.
No, and I raised my daughter not to be racist. I mean, she's totally colorblind. And it wasn't about that for me. It became about the mantra that he was a 17-year-old child, and a 17-year-old child could not do that. And, I mean, there's a story every day of the week about just the other day, a 17-year-old walked up in a parking lot, shot a 70-year-old man in the head, didn't rob him or anything, just shot him in the head and rode off on his bicycle. You know, 13 and 14-year-old kids.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot what they did. Oh, beat a man to death with flashlights, three of them. Just a homeless man beat him to death. So to say that a kid couldn't do this, first of all, yes, they can. They do it all the time. You know, they're either trying to get initiated into a gang or they're playing this game called Knockout. But that was my whole point, was it never made sense that a man would walk up to a kid and shoot him for absolutely no reason, you know, just because he was having a bad day. And I never said that I thought George should have gotten out. I never said George was right or wrong, but I knew it wasn't second degree murder, you know. But the thing is that caused, they started putting out what they thought was my personal information. I haven't seen anybody get it right yet, but they think they're putting out my personal information. And what's dangerous about that, and I mean threats, like, I know where you live, you know, you need to watch your back, is they could get someone totally innocent and hurt them, you know.
Yes.
But it hurt my feelings probably about the first 10 times someone called me a racist, and then I just, you know, I've always thought it was kind of funny that people get on the internet behind a hat and they want to fight with you. I just think it's funny. But,
and Vicki, you'll never tell anybody this, but I want to tell them, your best friend is African American, and you've never brought that up, and it's true. So anyway, continue on.
Yeah, well, and if you say that, that makes you even more racist.
Exactly,
you know?
You can't say that, so I want to say it for you, because you won't, but that's the absolute truth. So
yeah, and but what began to happen when that didn't bother me, and I didn't fight with them about it, and I didn't, you know, try to say, no, I'm not racist, I just said it's about self-defense.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's this website called Does Protest Too Much? That went and found poetry that I had written on MySpace years ago, like 10 years ago. And one of the poems, this did bother me, was about my daughter's father who had died. Mm-hmm. And it was her birthday, and I wrote a poem like it was from him. And it had a picture of her and him on it. And they put it up there calling me a racist. And, you know, I'm also on the board of for Dreamcatchers for Children. And as a consultant on Dreamcatchers for Children, which is a wonderful organization. And so they in that blog, they gave the web address for Dreamcatchers for Children and said they need to call the Secretary of State. They put up the address and phone number you could call to let them know that they have a racist on their board. And this woman could care less.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I mean, she could care less. Because she knows me, too. You know, she knows what I've done, you know, throughout the years for children. And it was, and then they started doing that. And when that didn't bother me, they called my job and told the owner of the company that I had a racist blog, and did they know that? And he looked at the blog and he's like, okay, I don't see anything racist, and it really had nothing to do with, you know, I'd never been accused of that at work ever.
Right.
And then, so then they started putting, then they took my blog. I know this is illegal, but they took my entire blog and posted it on their blog, like word for word, every single blog on my, every single entry on my blog, and said all of that was racist. And there's nothing racist. I mean, you can read it.
I know.
It's just, I don't agree. And I disagree that 17-year-olds cannot hurt people or start fights with people. You know, and so, yeah, and I was just going to read you one of the things. It's to stand by and do nothing while all these racist, hateful, vile people. That's right, Vicky Pate, a.k.a. VL Pate, author of the Filthy Disgusting blog. I mean, and they would write that all the time. And here's the problem. I don't care. It doesn't bother me to read stuff like that. But 4 years from now, I could be applying for a job.
Yes,
and now they
exactly.
do internet searches on you, and they see this. I mean, you put in my name, well, a lot of names, a lot of people come up that's not, that aren't even me. But, I mean, they will question it, even though they may not believe it. They may get good references for you. It's a liability to hire a racist.
That once the bell is rung, it's a horrible feeling to know it. You know what I got strength from, and Vicky, maybe you can relate to this too, but in the first guest, when she was talking, to think that people would attack the mother of a daughter who took her life due to bullying, to think that there are these same people out there that would even contemplate sending her hateful emails. Really, I have to just throw my hands up in the air and call them all insane.
Yeah, I don't understand. I don't understand that.
That's
insane.
So if they can go after her, of course they're going to go after someone like you who just offers an opinion contrary to what, well, a lot of Black America was thinking at the time due to the fact of how the media spun the whole Trayvon Martin, George Zimmerman case. But I applaud you for having the voice and the kahunas to just state your thoughts, and I'm sorry you went through that. That's just too much.
And that's a very good point, Michael. That's a very good point that if, you know, if they're going to torment the mother of a child who's committed suicide, you know, tormenting us is nothing. And there are people out there listening now, and they're going, well, that's not me. Well, guess what? It probably is. If you think that you've just offered your opinion, but yet your opinion was cruel and vicious and mean, then guess what? It is you. So you
well,
should
I
not
can
get
tell
off.
You that no one under their real name has ever called my work, called Dreamcatchers, written to Dreamcatchers. On my Twitter, no one with their real name has called me a racist. So they're just cowards. I mean, it's people that are
they're
cowards.
They're so cowardly. They are so cowardly. And it makes you wonder why. What is it? I'm so glad. Didn't the Huffington Post stop allowing anonymous posters? You actually have to provide them with your name and email before. Yeah, and I'm so glad. I think somehow we have to take the anonymity and the cruelty off of the internet.
Amen, Michael.
Krista, I was going to offer a music appreciation class to a friend who was homeschooling, and I had thought that would be something I should just put up as a website so everyone can go. But I tell you, I am so fearful of the way people that just want to be mean-spirited would attack me. And I don't know what. I'm so paranoid about it that it absolutely inhibits my ability to move forward with the project.
Yeah, here is Michael, who's absolutely a brilliant pianist, wanting to teach people and go on the internet, but he knows if he does, he wants to do something nice for somebody. And Michael, you know, if you do, these people are going to come on, these people that probably from the knitting group, and will absolutely tear you apart. And there
right.
is something that's got to be done, like you said, Michael, about the allowing of anonymity, at, you know, that word. I can't say it. It'll come out like I sound like I'm drunk.
Yeah.
Anyway, allowing someone to continue to be anonymous and spew this hatred, and I don't know what the answer is, but I applaud Huffington Post for taking that one step. Go ahead, Vicki.
I can tell you what the answer is, and you've experienced it yourself, is you don't address these people.
Yeah.
I mean, I've made the mistake of addressing, like, the don't Dutch protest too much. And you and I know this because for years of commenting and receiving comments and moderating comments, I wrote a comment on that, defending myself on, and I said something about them putting my daughter's poem up there.
Mm-hmm.
They edited my comment to say, of course I don't use sources. The name of my blog is www.bullshit.com. And it was under my name. I mean, they edited a comment, which is the biggest no-no that there
is.
Oh,
my gosh.
Yeah, so I should have ignored it. Because when you ignore them, like what happened recently with you,
mm-hmm.
when you ignore it, they look bad. You don't
look
bad.
They look like idiots, yeah.
Yeah, the appearance is that they're just, I mean, if Michael started a website, you know, wanting to teach piano and people came on and were, you know, the knitting nuts came on and were ugly to him or whatever, they just look stupid. I mean, it's no reflection on Michael, just like I don't feel like it's a reflection on me.
But there is that concern. If someone said, hey, I'm homeschooling my kids, and that someone were to say, well, we did this online appreciation, music appreciation class that Michael offered, and they went and read all these lunatic
exactly.
comments,
mm-hmm.
they would say, oh, no, I'm not going anywhere near this. With
yeah, ooh, those people don't like him. It's the
uh-uh.
bell. It's the bell. You're right, Michael. And,
yeah.
and Vicki, you're right,
yeah.
too. Ignoring it is good, but you know what? There is some power to those words, and the problem is you'll never know. I will never know how many jobs I didn't get or how many, you know, situations or how many offers I didn't get because of what has been posted. I was terrified that the iHeartRadio gig, which is still on, everybody, it's still happening. It's typical, you know, hurry up and wait, but it's going to happen. I was terrified they're going to Google my name and just see this much. It's just baloney. It's just absolute
yeah.
lie after lie. And fortunately, when I talked to the guy who hired me, he goes, I don't care. Who cares? He said, I want you to talk about true crime. I don't care what these, you know, idiots say about you. So I'm like, oh, thank God. Because I thought maybe
yeah,
that
thank
was
thank God,
reason.
Exactly.
Yeah. I thought maybe that
well,
was
look
the
at what they've done.
Held up.
Look at what they've done to George Zimmerman. I mean.
Yes.
Of course, everybody knows him, but even in obscurity, even 20 years from now, people are going to read he's a child molester, he's a murderer.
Mm-hmm.
Sabrina and, you know, what Michael
now,
said
who's
about
Sabrina?
The mother. What Sabrina is
Trayvon's
Sabrina
mom.
Martin is Trayvon's mom.
Okay.
Well, I had empathy for her. I sympathized. Of course, it's hard to lose a child. It's horrific. And I gave her, you know, 6 months, 7 months. But at some point, you know, there was a lot out there that she kicked him out 3 times. He wanted to buy a gun. He was fighting at school. You know, he was stealing jewelry. At some point, she had to stop with the 12-year-old picture and railroading George Zimmerman as a child molesting, murdering, horrible person and back off a little bit. And I thought that she would do that. And she is
mm-hmm.
not, I mean, even on their foundation, they're still calling him a murderer. You know,
I know
her lawyer hasn't. Yeah, and I mean, I have no empathy even for her right now because
I still
somebody
do,
else
but yeah, that's just wrong to try to flame the hatred, flame the haters.
Exactly.
I don't know, and in your situation, Vicki, what it's okay to disagree. Again, you know, people can have their own thoughts on George Zimmerman, Trayvon Martin. But what makes these people rise to a level that they not only want to disagree with you, they want to destroy you by contacting your employers and your what is that deficit in the human psyche that allows that behavior? Someone needs to explain that. We need a shrink.
We do. We need a shrink, and I don't even know if they could explain it. But I do think there is one thing I think we can all understand very clearly, and that's the feeling of power that it gives people. It gives people a feeling of power. They're powerless at their job. They're nagged at home. Nobody likes them. Everybody is criticizing them, but they can get on the internet, and bam, they can hit somebody and hit them hard because they know who we are. We use our real names, and they don't have to, and they feel that power, and that's the problem. And again, with the radio show that I want to do, I want to address these issues because I do think we can find a way to stop it. It won't be stopped completely, but I think, again, it's, you know, anger turned inward is depression, and depression turned outward is anger. And if somebody is trying to destroy somebody, there is something wrong, like you said, Michael, with them. What is it? What happened? How can we fix them? I'm not trying to say we should feel sorry for them, but they do need help in one way or another.
Well, look, Alice LaViolette, and I confess, I signed the petition. Someone started a petition to get her kicked off the speaker. She was scheduled to speak at a conference. I don't know, it was after the trial was over, like a month or two after, I believe, and someone started an online petition at change.org, and I happily added my name because I thought she really had no business standing up for, I think it negated all of her, the good work she has done in the past for abused women by actually giving credibility to a psychotic, lying, murdering scumbag. But
like Jody Arias, yeah. She was the doctor that testified on behalf of Jody Arias. So for those who don't remember.
So in that sense, I guess I'm guilty, but that was just signing a petition. That I certainly didn't ever contact her. She got death threats and everything else. I mean, what is going on?
It's crazy, and people need to realize and take responsibility. They don't. I, honest to goodness, Michael and Vicki and everybody listening, believe that a lot of these people out there, a lot of these people who have cyber harassed myself, you, other people, that they truly don't realize at to what extent their words hurt and to what extent their harassment is doing to another human being. Maybe if they could sit down and see our faces when we read these lies, when we read these horrible things about ourselves that they're putting out there. Now, of course, you're always going to have those people that don't care, that they'll get a kick out of it. Those are the people that are sick and twisted, and there's nothing you can do for them. But I do think, like Tina Meyer was saying, they get calls all the time at the Megan Meyer Foundation from adults saying, what do I do? I'm being harassed. And like Tina said, there's not a whole lot you can do. My stalker, when I got the 3-year injunction against him that just ran out a little bit ago, I was excited because we had some IP addresses. And when I called the police, the cop said, well, yeah, we traced one to a monk's house. And I said, and he said it was a wireless. And I said, well, obviously he just sat outside the guy's house and did it. I said, that's what happened. And he goes, you don't know that. And I said, I know a monk didn't come on and post a Google map to my house telling people to come up and have sex with me. I said, it was him. And fortunately, the judge believed me, and we got the injunction. Now I have to go through that all again because he's been brought back, and, you know, he's back to life once again. But that's a whole other show. But there is not a lot of sympathy.
How do we know, though, when somebody that's some of these wing nuts, how do you know that they're harmless and anonymous, that they're not really going to show up and appear?
You absolutely do not, and that's the scary thing. You have no idea. When I was in radio for years and years in Salt Lake City, and it was the same thing. You had some crazy people out there who really thought you were talking to them through the radio, and you had to take precaution. But it's different now because now it literally is the whole world that is listening and watching and reading and typing. But you're right, Michael, you don't know that they're not harmless. They could be very harmful, and that's the scary thing. And the police, you know, they're busy with people that are getting murdered and raped and beaten. And you know, here you call and you say, well, somebody's saying something mean about me on the internet. And like Tina said, they're like, well, that's not good. Well, I don't call when they say something mean. I call when they say something that's threatening. That's when I take action. But I do think, go ahead, Michael.
I didn't say anything, darling.
Oh, somebody was going to say something. Okay, Vicki, go ahead.
Me. What I was going to say is there's also a bit of enabling, like, for instance, on Twitter, what's his name? Roseanne Barr. What is the guy's name? I always forget his name, that tweeted out the address for George Zimmerman's parents.
Spike Lee.
Okay, Spike Lee on Twitter, and it's totally against the rules. You do not put someone's information out. He put the address out, and it was the wrong people, and he had to pay for it monetarily. Then Roseanne tweets out the correct address, and I know this sounds silly, but neither one of them were suspended for at all. There was nothing done by Twitter to them. If I were to write someone's address, say Spike Lee's or Roseanne Barr's, and Roseanne Barr's had me suspended twice, I would get suspended.
She has?
Oh, yeah, she's had me suspended twice. Can you edit that out?
Why?
No, we can't, but that's okay.
Because I said something to her about her view on the Trayvon Martin case. Didn't call her a name, didn't call her racist. I simply disagreed with her. And then another time, I don't even remember, there were two different times. But
was
the problem
the Steubenville?
Is,
wasn't she behind the Steubenville media hype? Didn't she get behind that?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
I'm not even sure what it was.
Yeah. But, I mean, and the death threats against George Zimmerman. Nothing's ever done. Nothing's ever said. Piers Morgan doesn't have our show on, you know, someone comparing George Zimmerman to Hitler. But when it comes to Robert Zimmerman, which was an unfortunate tweet,
Now, who's Robert Zimmerman?
Who's Robert's brother.
Okay.
He's George Zimmerman's brother. He devotes an hour show to a tweet that Robert Zimmerman did. But none of the other death threats, none of the other, I'm coming to your house, you know, I'm going to kill a white man just because of Trayvon. Mm-hmm. They don't even get, you know, I mean, it's like it's almost enabling. And the news, the media enables by making excuses.
Yeah,
you know,
you're right.
So it makes it easier for them. They know they can say whatever they want to, but I think if we were all sitting down at a table with these people, they would never say these things.
No,
not because
never.
They're afraid of hurting you, because they're just as much a coward in front of you as they are by not putting their real name. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Right.
They wouldn't say it to your face ever.
They wouldn't say, because they're too cowardly. Exactly. And I don't have the answer. I wish I did. And Michael, I am so sorry you've gone through this. And Vicki, I've known you for how long, and you are truly a wonderful person, and there is not a racist bone in your body. And it's okay to say that somebody did something wrong if they're of a different nationality or color. I mean, that's just, you just want to tell the truth. And it doesn't mean you're a racist. It doesn't mean you're a racist because you disagree. And Michael, you know, what the hell? Knitting. I can't get over that. Knitting. These people are getting angry at knitting, for God's sakes. I just can't believe it. Michael, so I would hope that you would, just because you have such a gift, at some point maybe put up the homeschooling piano lessons that you have talked about, because you do have such a gift, but I would understand completely why you wouldn't want to. Do you think you might ever change your mind?
I don't know. Well, first of all, it's not piano lessons. It's just a music appreciation. So,
well, music, but, yes, right.
Yeah, but I don't know. You know, I'm happy to do it for my friends that are homeschooling. And you know, I'll just do the same as I've done before, put YouTube videos up, and very private to them. And, I was telling you, Trish, YouTube always wants to make it easier for people to find your videos. They think they're doing you a service. And every time I sign on, I get something saying, let's identify you by your real name. And I think, I don't want my real name again out of here.
Forget it,
people from the knitting world. And there's others, too. I'm not saying those are the only bullies I've encountered in my life. But No, I just, it's a matter of self-preservation and protection. I'm too sensitive, and stuff hurts me when it's said.
Well, it's because you're a wonderful, sweet man. That's why. And Vicki, you're still doing your blog. Give us your address.
Deb, I'm going to write it in the chat room, but it's www.renewsit.com.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Michael, any final comments for tonight?
No, I just wish everybody could get along.
I do too. Boy, Rodney King had it right. Can't we just all get along? Miss Vicki, any comments?
No. Nope. Good show, though.
Just everybody needs to get along. Next week, we've got a great show. We're going to have the gentleman who wrote the book on the Long Island serial killer, and he used a lot of our Web Sleuth members and their sleuthing abilities to help him write the book. They'll be on next week. We've got a great detective coming on in a couple of weeks about a cold case. We've got all kinds of things planned. So, again, it's time to cover ourselves with legal goo at the very end of the show. We goo at the beginning and at the end. Trisha's True Crime Radio, the opinions expressed here are those of the hosts and guests. And do remember that Trisha's True Crime Radio is a completely separate entity from WebSleuths.com, LLC, and ForumsForJustice.org. In other words, my darlings, if you get upset about something that you hear on my radio show, you come to me. You don't go to the forums and freak out. You come to Trisha, and we'll make you happy. It's Trisha's True Crime Radio, where we discuss true crime and current events, and we always do it with common sense. Michael, Vicki, thank you very much, and goodbye, everybody. Take care.